Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And welcome, New York. Welcome to another exciting episode of Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm your host, Roy G. Bruce is out of town for the moment. I believe he's playing some golf. Probably not doing it very well. Bruce is one of those guys who, when he hits the course, he makes sure he gets all his money worth. He takes as many shots as possible. So
I think it's probably good that we don't have him on the air today, because the studio would just be bleeping everything.
It would be bleeping. There would be lots of bleeps if we had Bruce Hall wired at the golf course. But we do have a lot to get into today. I brought my boys from College Tailgate with me, so we're going to get into some college sports in the next hour. In the second hour, we're going to break down the NFL. I'm going to get into all my picks. We'll be doing that. That'll be great. I'll tell you, sorry about that. See, when I sit in Bruce's seat, all of a sudden I got to clear my throat. I started aging. Next you know, I'll be telling stories about how I got abducted by aliens, all kinds of different things. But in the second hour, we're going to get into some NFL things. I only played one NFL team this weekend, other than the Baltimore Ravens, who I will get into later on. I told you guys that I thought the Baltimore Ravens were an 8-8 team, and Thursday they showed that. So I will get into that more in the second hour. I'll tell you who is my only play in the NFL this weekend, but I will, of course, pick all games because that's what I do. And then here in the first hour, like I said, I brought my guys from the college tailgate with me. I'll get into all things NCAA, and we will discuss our top 25 that we put out. We'll also discuss the AP top 25 that is out there, and we'll talk about all the big upsets that seem to be bringing something called parity to the NCAA football. Now, we already have parity. Matt, thank you.
Yes.
Yes, we have parity in the
with NCAA. With a T, right?
Yes, with a. Matt corrects my grammar on a daily basis. He sends me emails just to correct me. Thank you, Matt.
I'm going to send you the word of the day, toilet paper.
Please do. Yes, I would love that. But NCAA basketball already has a thing called parity. They send teams like Butler to two straight national championships when no other major NCAA sport can do something like that. They already have major upsets. The top 25 is flooded with teams that nobody's ever heard of, and we love it. There's a thing called March Madness that everybody, even if they don't watch or like basketball, pays attention to. And that's just something that college football doesn't really have. There's the people who are extremely, crazy would be an understatement for college football. There's people who are absolutely insane for their hometown teams, but there are not a lot of teams who are just college, not a lot of people who are just college football fans. You don't get that around, around December, January when all the bowls are happening. There aren't major pools going around in offices of women who don't even know, you know, who the major players are, who's up for the Heisman. There aren't people who are just betting or having fun with their coworkers on these pools in college football. I mean, it's starting to pick up. You're starting to see different bowl pools for college football, but it's nothing compared to the NCAA basketball. And this year, we're starting to see more and more upsets. In week one, we saw 7 FCS schools upset FBS schools. Now, a lot of people thought that might have been a fluke. Maybe it was. Maybe it was a fluke. Maybe it was a one-time thing. Or maybe it really is time to take a bigger look at college football and to see what we really have here. The greatest worry that I have about this whole situation is, of course, the BCS. I'm a conspiracy theorist, as many of you know. I can't help that. I'm Mr. Devil's Advocate about everything that ever goes on.
That seat really is sinking into you, isn't
it? I've always been a conspiracy theorist. That's why Bruce and I. That's why I'm here. Okay.
Did you meet at the smoking gun convention?
We were at an alien convention in Area 52 because Area 51 was closed down. No, I've always been a conspiracy theorist. I've always been a Devil's Advocate. My wife hates that about me. Hell, I'm sure Marty doesn't like that about when Marty and I first met. Marty at WFAS, when he would bring in.
Did you pat him down
me
for
and
a
my
wire?
Guys, no, when he was bringing me and my guys on, I'm sure I was the biggest headache that he's ever had. I'm sure that we met a couple different times through emails, and he was sending me emails about the ideas that he had for us. And of course, I met every single one of those ideas with a stubborn head, just because that's who I'm sorry, Marty. Okay, that's just who I am. All right, I'm a stubborn headed guy. You guys, if you guys have listened to me every
Did you
week,
test his water
you
for
know
fluoride?
That. You all know this, okay? I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm a stubborn head guy. So when I look at the situation of parity throughout NCAA football, I take a look at it and I say, crap, what is this going to do with the BCS? Are the big heads, the big talking people, and the people who are behind the scenes in the BCS, are they going to look at this and say, well, what do you mean we don't have parity in college football? It's right here. BCS system is working. We don't need to go to a further playoff. Because that's what I think. When I see all these upsets, I think, oh, crap, the four-team playoff that they have that they think is going to be a temporary Band-Aid, now they're going to think that it's actually going to work. Because that's not – we need a true playoff in college football. You can keep all the bowls, you know, for those, you know, the seven and whatever teams, the seven-win, six-win teams. Give them the bowls, strap a GoDaddy on it, and go from there. But anything else, we need at least a 10-team playoff. And if this parity and if this Band-Aid that's going over college football, if this ruins that, there's going to be a lot of upset people. And I'm one of them. Because I want that playoff system. I want that. We need that playoff system. And this weekend we saw a team, Georgia, who a lot of people were high on, get upset by Clemson, an ACC team. And then another ACC team in the University of Miami, beat up on Florida, who I had Florida in that game. I had them +3. I thought that was money in the bank, but apparently it's not good enough for the people down in the Sunshine State because Florida was upset by their little sister in Miami. So the ACC, who I have been a huge hater of, I can't stand the ACC. There's no good football that gets played in the ACC. Virginia Tech's a joke. Maryland got the picture and shipped it off to the Big Ten, so they understood how big of a joke football is in the ACC. The ACC even understands how big of a joke football is in the ACC because all the teams that they added are basketball schools. They hung their hats on Duke and UNC, and they brought in Syracuse and Pitt. Those aren't football powerhouses. Those are basketball schools, okay? Miami should not be beating Florida. Clemson should not be beating Georgia. I don't care about Taj Boyd. Clemson should not be beating Georgia. If the SEC really is this top of the food chain conference like we've all tricked ourselves into believing, if they are really the top, you know, they're the cat's meow. They're the top of the mountain. Everybody else is just wanting to be them. If that's really what we have in college football, then Georgia should not be losing to Clemson. Florida should not be losing to the U. Okay, that is for Louisville to lose. The top of the Big East and the top of the now AAC, they're supposed to lose. They're supposed to lose to unranked opponents. Okay, not Florida. Florida was a number three team in the country at one point last year. Now, I know this is a new year, but still, they were still a top 25 team this year. You do not lose, especially if you rain from the SEC conference, you do not lose from other conferences, you do not get upset by unranked opponents. Now, Alabama, maybe they got it right. Maybe they knew that the SEC this year wasn't going to be what it has been in years past. I know that until somebody else takes the reins, takes that crystal ball away from the SEC, then this argument is null and void. But Alabama's schedule is that of an ACC team. There's no major out-of-conference games. There's no risk like Georgia took, like Florida took. There's nothing like that. And we'll get into all of this and more. The next segment, I got my guys from College Tailgate. We'll break down all college football. The second hour, we'll be covering the NFL. But for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. On the other side of this break, I got the guys from College Tailgate. We're going to break in this whole weekend down. A lot of upsets. You're listening to WFAS AM 1230. Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We'll be right back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Welcome back, New York. News Talk 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I got my boys from College Tailgate with me right now. I will introduce them one by one. I will introduce these people as my producer forgets how to fade out music. I will introduce all of them. Chris the Dude Lambert we have with us. He is a SMC Morgantown WVU beat reporter. He is Mr. College Expansion himself and the host of The Spin Zone on SMC Radio. Chris, how are we doing today, buddy?
All right. Got a few comments and some things you said. First of all, Florida sucks. Florida sucked for the last couple of years. They got their butt whipped by Louisville. They've got Muschamp as head coach. You know, Saban recommended Muschamp for WVU after Rod left. West Virginia turned him down.
Well,
it's all on the coach. They need Urban Meyer back.
Well, regardless of who the coach is, and I hear your argument, and believe me, we'll get much deeper into this. But regardless of who the coach is at Florida, Florida should not be losing to Miami. Next up on the list of guests that we have on today of our panel of experts of College Tailgate, we have Doug Hazard. He is the owner of Gridiron History. He is Mr. Arkansas, Arkansas State, and he is the host of 2 Cents Radio. Doug.
But he's not owner of a computer.
He doesn't own a computer. He only does hangouts via iPhone because he likes to show us all his mechanical toys. How are we doing, Doug?
Well, the only reason why I'm doing this via the iPhone instead of my usual studio is because I was actually at the Auburn-Arkansas State game last night.
That's right. Yeah. And how was that? How did that play out? Did it play out like you thought it would?
No, it did not.
Yeah.
we were talking about the rushing yards on yesterday's College Tailgate Saturday show being crucially important for the Arkansas State Red Wolves. And according to the stat sheet here, they got a whopping 130 rushing yards after getting over 500 the week before.
Yeah, so no longer the number one rushing team. Yeah, no longer the number one rushing team in the country. Next up, we got our boy Jeremy Simon. Jeremy is the owner of BlueGoldSports.com. He is also the host of We're All Ears on SMC Radio. How are we doing, Jeremy?
I'm still reeling from last night. A good friend of mine recommended a game at -3, without lost money. I'm not going to name names or anything, but
yeah, you wouldn't come on a show and say that, would you?
No.
Yeah, Florida let us all down, buddy. I'm sorry, Florida let us all down. Next up, we have my buddy Pete Mundo of WFAN here in New York. Good friend of mine. He's also the host of the Pete Mundo Show on SMC Radio. Pete, how we doing, buddy?
Oh, not bad. And you know, we don't want to get into bad picks from yesterday because God knows I had plenty of them. I just had to scrap together a few dollars to join you here on this show this morning. It was so bad.
Yeah, not a good weekend. Not a good weekend at all. But guys, some things that I really wanted to jump into. I touched on them a little bit in the introduction, and for all of you listening, bear with us as there is a big panel of experts here, and we are going to try to get as much information into your heads and across your radio as possible. So, guys, first off, Pete, I'm going to start with you because I know this is something that we talked about on your show previously about how the SEC may or may not be the top dog, and there's a conference called the Big 12 who could face and could, I don't know, pull their britches up and possibly muster some things with the SEC. But this weekend, a lot of Big 12 teams took a hit, Texas losing to BYU. And the SEC took a hit as well, with Florida losing to Miami and the week before Georgia losing to Clemson. Is there a parity in college football? And is SEC still the top dog?
SEC is still the top dog just because, to me, nobody's overtaken them. I mean, as much as I want to see the Big 12 make that jump, just, you know, having some ties to the conference. I thought the Big 12 at the beginning of the season was going to be top to bottom the deepest conference. But then we saw what happened in week one. It was incredibly ugly. Kansas State, Iowa State, West Virginia barely getting by William & Mary. And week two, you know, nobody in the Big 12 played anybody outside of the OU-West Virginia game, which is a conference game. The one decent opponent on the Big 12 schedule was BYU, and they blew out Texas. And it's a Texas team that a lot of us thought was going to be right at the top of the Big 12. So that, to me, is scary for that conference, because the fact that Texas just got whacked by BYU says not only is maybe the bottom half of this conference worse than we thought it would be, the top half isn't as good either as we thought it might be. So the SEC is still the number one conference to me, just because nobody's clearly shown that they've overtaken them. And that's why I kind of look at it that way. The Pac-12, can you say that they're up and coming? You can, but USC losing to Washington State last night doesn't help their cause. So to me, it's still SEC, everybody else, until some other conference proves otherwise.
Now, Chris, you're a guy who reigns from the Big 12. You cover the Mountaineers. You were very high on WVU going into that game last night in Oklahoma. Neither team really showed a potent offense, I guess, but do you think that the Big 12 could be a conference of that could rival the SEC?
Oh, certainly. I think Baylor's going to be in the title game against Alabama. Baylor is the real deal. Baylor has a head coach who not only knows how to coach, he knows how to recruit. You know, Texas has a problem, and Texas' problem's name's Mac Brown. He's getting his hat handed to him by Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M.
Okay, so Baylor to the national championship, you say. So you believe that their offense could move forward? I know they got a new quarterback, and it's no longer RG3 for those of you who don't follow college football too closely. He's a Washington Redskin now. But their new guy is rivaling records set by that guy who now wears a number 10 jersey in Washington. So, Chris, do you think their offense could carry them through the Big 12 and to the national championship? That's not just you talking. That's you firmly believe that.
I firmly believe that. I think they'll win the Big 12. Art Briles is a heck of a coach. I mean, he's probably the best coach in the Big 12. And I also think that West Virginia is going to be a lot better than they've been in the first two games by the end of the year. 40% of West Virginia's roster played their first Big 12 game yesterday. Think about that. They went to Norman, Oklahoma, played in front of 82,000 people, and should have won the game.
Now, Doug, you mentioned that you were at that Auburn game last night, an Auburn team that we sat down yesterday and we talked about how they didn't use their quarterback in the first game. He didn't even throw for 100 yards. He threw for 99 yards on 19 attempts, so they didn't even really use the guy. Yesterday, they came up against an opponent in Arkansas State who, at least it was a big deal to Arkansas State fans that they were playing. This SEC conference, do you think they're down, or do you think that they're still the top dog? And if there's anyone out there, don't be limited to the Big 12 just because we have three Big 12 guys out here. Don't be limited to the Big 12. Is there another conference out there who could potentially push the envelope against the SEC?
Right now, absolutely not. The SEC is top dog, and they're not. They basically. They're guarding that bone. They're guarding that yard, and nobody's been able to put a chain on their asses yet. you know, it's like you know, aside from Florida losing to Miami this week and Georgia losing to Clemson last week, there's really Texas. You know, Alabama's winning the game they're supposed to. Texas A&M winning the game they're supposed to. LSU's winning the game they're supposed to. And Auburn, they're winning the game they're supposed to. It's not pretty. I think at the end of the day, when it gets towards the end of the year, that's going to hurt the SEC that, the games have been as close as they have. But in the grand scheme of things, yeah, nobody's coming close to knocking the dog off the pile.
Now, Jeremy, don't mean to make you the last guy on this question or anything like that, but I know that there was a Florida team last night that you kind of thought the same way that I did, let's just say, thinking that they were going to handle business against Miami, and they didn't do that. Does that hurt the does that hurt the image of the SEC? Are you on board with Doug and Pete saying that the SEC is the top conference in America, or does a powerhouse, a big name, this isn't a Tennessee losing, you know, this is Florida losing, this is one of their big dogs, does that hurt the perception of the SEC?
Well, it's a good thing you brought me on last, because I actually disagree with both of them. I think that the SEC is considered the top dog strictly because of Alabama still, and probably rightfully so. Alabama's best team in the country. But you know, Georgia losing to Clemson and turning around and beating South Carolina, who's a good team, I wouldn't say anybody's above them yet, but I think there's – and I hate to say it because I can't stand watching the Big Ten play, but the Big Ten might be up there on par with them right now. The Big 12 definitely isn't just because I don't think there's a front runner. Texas was supposed to be the stud team this year. They have a ton of talent, and they gave up 550 rushing yards to BYU last night. So there's no front runner in the Big 12. The Big Ten might be the closest thing, but I don't think the SEC is far and above everybody else as we want to believe.
I'm glad you brought up the Big Ten, because there's a team in the Big Ten who I've been extremely high on, and anyone who knows me knows that I'm extremely high on Northwestern. And I think that Northwestern could be a dark horse to possibly upset the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Buckeyes, a team who lost, well, it's still to be seen, but all reports that I've heard pointed to a possible torn ACL of their quarterback and Heisman hopeful. Now, in that Big Ten conference, Pete, we'll start with you again. Is there a team, if it's not the Ohio State Buckeyes, who could make a push for the national championship? We lost Pete here for a second. Check your mic there, Pete.
He's talking.
Is he talking? Yeah, well, talk louder there, Pete. We'll take care of you there, buddy.
Can you guys hear me okay?
There it is.
You guys got me better now?
Yeah, we got you. Let's go. Is there a team in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I was just saying, in terms of the Big Ten, no. There's nobody else, to me, that can potentially challenge for a national title. I mean, Michigan had a nice showing last night, but I'm just not buying into Notre Dame enough. It's not that Michigan can't do it or isn't good. I just don't think Notre Dame was ever as good as people thought they were going into that game last night. So it's Ohio State. It's bust, because at some point Michigan's going to slip up, and that's it. The Big Ten, to me, is going into this season. I talked about it on our show. One of the most disappointing conferences in the country going into this year as the Power Five. So, no, the Big Ten really has nothing going for it, to me, at a national title ever outside of Ohio State.
Now, Chris, I know that you've never really been big on the Big Ten at all. I know that there's a certain commissioner over there that you are deep, you know, you have a very deep respect for. But is there anybody coming out of that conference, if it's not Ohio State, if they actually do lose their quarterback who was supposed to be a Heisman contender, is there anybody else who can come out of that conference?
I don't think so. The Big Ten doesn't have the speed to contend with the SEC. I think Baylor's going to reach the championship game, but the other team that could seriously challenge the SEC in terms of speed is Oregon. I think the Pac-12 plays a little bit soft football. They play a lot of those West Coast high-speed offenses, and they forget that football is a collision sport. But, you know, Rich Rodriguez at Arizona is doing a lot of good stuff up there or over there. And, you know, Arizona is one of my dark horses. But nobody's going to beat Alabama. Alabama is just on a different level. LSU is probably the closest thing. You know, they're in the SEC. You know, it's all we can wish and we can look at teams, but the fact of the matter is Nick Saban has a dynasty down there, and he is going to steamroll through the playoffs, all the way, or through the SEC, all the way to the championship game, and nobody can touch Alabama's depth. Nobody can touch Saban's coaching. He's probably the best college football coach who's ever lived.
Well, I mean, he certainly has a resume to prove that. He's won national championships with two different teams, and he's looking to create a very big dynasty in Alabama with something that bothers me. And I don't know if it's the Big Ten either. I don't know if the Big Ten's the answer. You know, it definitely looks like the Big 12 is probably not the answer. As again, Texas loses to a BYU team who lost to Virginia last week, and Virginia goes in and gets blown out by Oregon. So that just kind of shows you the level of competition between some of the big dogs in the country and what the big dogs of the Big 12 were thought to be. So
Roy, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Look at Texas, and you look at Texas, and you look at Texas's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
How many 4- and 5-star recruits did they get? Nothing's wrong with Texas, the talent at Texas. What's wrong with Texas is the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Nick Saban down in Alabama. How many 4- and 5-star recruits does he get? How many could he get?
Yeah.
Nick does a very, very good job of getting his players who fit his system, and then he coaches them up. He would rather have a roster full of solid players
mm-hmm.
than superstars out of high school who don't know how to work hard. And that's what the SEC does. They have that speed, they have that work ethic, and they play good defense, and defense wins championships. And I'm warning you guys. I mean, you know, all you guys were certain that Oklahoma was going to hand West Virginia their hat last night. Baylor is the real deal. They had 780 yards yesterday. I know it was against Buffalo,
mm-hmm.
but it's hard to rack up 780 yards against anybody.
Well, we'll get Doug and Jeremy in on this on the other side of the break. We are continuing here with the guys of College Tailgate. You're listening to News Talk 1230 WFAS. But first, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. Stick with us. We break down college football and the SEC Conference.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Georgia did beat up on South Carolina last night, yesterday. They pulled away with a 41-30 victory, so they are most likely going to move right back into the top 10 in the country a week after they lost to Clemson, the number 4 team in the country, which that victory to me, that Georgia victory over South Carolina, just fuels Clemson University. And so far, none of the panel of the College Tailgate crew has even mentioned or sniffed an ACC name when talking about if there's another team out there who could possibly move into the national championship contention era. Now, Doug, is there another conference out there in America? Is it the ACC? Is it the Big Ten? Is there another conference out there who could compete with the SEC?
A conference? No, just individual schools. I just want to touch on one thing real quick with Ohio State. It's important to note that Ohio State actually is being led by a former SEC coach that has won a national championship. So that's probably why Ohio State's going to be up, you know, the top dog there for a little while. Although, again, Michigan beating Notre Dame, I think that kind of puts an exclamation mark on Notre Dame. So Clemson, they might actually, if they can stay on top of what they're doing, they might actually have a dog in the hunt for this year. But, you know, again, it's the ACC.
Still no faith in the ACC. Jeremy, you have any faith in the ACC or any other conference in America?
Not conference-wise. I think like Doug said, individual teams. Clemson's good. Clemson's really good. Miami, I don't know how good Miami is because I don't know how good Florida is. Florida might not be that good. From top to bottom conference-wise, no. You really can't. I'm sorry. I take that back. Top to bottom, I'm not sure the SEC is the best conference. And I'll go back to the Big Ten. And I cannot stand the Big Ten. But top to bottom, they're probably the best. The best next to the SEC, I say. But the ACC, I mean, really, who else is there really other than Clemson right now?
See, that's the big question. I didn't think that really. There's Florida State. But could Miami be a team that gets – you know, shifted into that conversation with beating Florida? I mean, there's a lot of unknowns in the ACC. There are. And everyone wrote them off because they are the ACC. In the offseason, they took that basketball conference stance. But maybe this could be a resurgence of the U, or on the other hand, this could be a decline of the SEC and Florida powerhouse. So you got to take – it's one or the other. It's not Florida slipped up because – And Miami just kind of rolled the dice and somehow upset the king, and now they're going to go back to being mediocre Miami. But, Pete, I'll let you finish this up. The ACC, I know I threw that in there after I asked you the initial question, but the ACC, could Clemson or the ACC compete for a national championship?
Well, I think that's one of the big things that is not giving credit, and that's giving Clemson, you know, the props they deserve for that win last week against Georgia. I mean, it's not that Georgia came out and beat South Carolina this week. It goes to show you that top 8-10, the razor thin margin that there is between those teams on any given day. It's not that, you know, Georgia's taking a step back or Mark Richt or Aaron Murray can't win the big game. It's just that, you know what, sometimes you run into a better team on a better day, and that was Clemson last Saturday. And I think Clemson's a team that, you know, they had the big game against Florida State in the middle of the season. They get through that one. I mean, they could run the table. They're going to be sitting in a national title game, and it's going to be much more well-deserved than, say, Notre Dame last year. So I have no problem with people talking about Clemson in the national title, but the ACC as a whole, no, it's down. I mean, it's Clemson, it's Florida State. I'm not buying into Miami just yet, but those top two definitely can play with anybody in the country.
Boy, I have to jump in here because I loves me some ACC. Clemson and Florida State are members of the SEC Junior League. They are not spiritually a member of the ACC. And Clemson has a little problem in that to reach the ACC title game, they have to play Florida State. Jameis Winston is the real deal. He's going to be – he is – Johnny Manziel with talent. Kid can play some quarterback. They're not going to get past Florida State. Florida State's going to be hurt by playing whatever sacrificial lambs the other division in the ACC throws at them. But, you know, my favorite team in the ACC is Duke. Man, Duke's David Cutcliffe, he's building the powerhouse down there. They doubled up Memphis yesterday 14-7.
Yeah, that's a big
Can't
win.
Beat that.
It's a big win for the Dukies.
I think they're playing like North Carolina Beauty and Art Institute next week. You know, they're a 2-point favorite. I think they'll cover.
Well, jumping into this, moving forward with this talk of national championship contenders, now that we have established that maybe there are a couple other teams, but none of them really stick out, I feel like to me that automatically opens up the conversation of playoffs. Now, I know that next year, I believe it is, we're moving to a 4-team playoff. Is that enough, or do we need to see this expand to an 8 or a 10-team playoff? And I'll start with you, Doug.
I've been chomping at the bit for this. I've always advocated a plus 3, basically an 18 playoff. I think that's going to be the only way that we can actually get a true champion in place. Well, aside from going to, what is it, a 64-team playoff or 32-team?
Yeah,
that's going to be too much. I think a plus 8 should be more than enough to answer all the questions.
Jeremy, how many teams would it take to, I guess, make you content on who the national championship is?
I'd say a minimum of 8. And the reason I say that is because we look at the NCAA basketball tournament every year, and even with all the teams that get in, there is still controversy about teams missing out. And that controversy is going to be tenfold if you only have 4 teams in the playoff system in college football. 8 minimum, I would actually like to see more.
Pete?
I was always an advocate of 16 just by looking at 16 and saying, okay, you know, you give automatic bids to all the conferences, and that includes, you know, Mountain West, the Sun Belt, you know, throwing Conference USA, and then you have a handful of at-large bids. But I'm willing to see how 4 works because I understand the people that say you got to give the regular season a chance in the sense that, you know, you have playoff games week 1. You have Georgia-Clemson, which has so much pull to it because of the fact that there's, in this case, this year, 2 teams playing for a national title. Starting next year, it's only 4. If you bump it up to 8 or 16, does that diminish the value of that Georgia-Clemson game week 1? It probably does. So I want to see how 4 works before I'm jumping on the 8 or 16 bandwagon.
And Chris, to close us out here, how many you need?
4, unless you want 2 SEC teams in the title game.
Yeah.
Or unless you go to the Big 5 split off in a Division 4, and then you'll see 6 or 8. And the reason why that will only happen if the Big 5 conferences split off is to add playoff games, you would have to take away from regular season games. And that's not going to happen because home games are too valuable.
See, I talked about this in the opener. I think that the 4 team playoff isn't enough. I think it's a good start. I think we're moving in the right direction. I just hope it doesn't stop it there. And I touched on this in the opening, saying that all this parity and all these upsets, I fear that the big heads and the money grabbers are going to say, look, there's already people knocking each other out to get to this four. So we have these four and we know who these four are. I fear that, and I think we need to move something closer to what basketball has. I know that football is never going to get a 65-team tournament, okay? I understand that. I'm okay with that. But I think that Pete and Jeremy touched on it, and Doug, you touched on it too. Chris, I don't really agree with the four. Like I said, I don't think the four is there. I think it needs to be closer to that 8 or 10. So, Doug, that 8 or 10, is that, would that do it for you? Would that be the end of the, what, would that be the end of the conversation?
It would be a start. You know, now it's important to note that every other division in the NCAA, the NFL, high school football, they all have playoffs. And I'm very tuned in with the Arkansas State of Arkansas high school football program, and in many cases, they have up to 12 teams competing, depending on the number of schools in that conference. So, you know, a couple of teams get bye weeks. You know, it's going to have to be 8 or 16, but I think 8 would be a good start. Let's see where we go from there. If it works great, then keep it. If not, then we can adjust as needed. 4 is just not going to cut it.
All right. Yeah, no, I feel like we're all in agreement that a playoff is necessary. I think Chris was the only one on a limb here saying that it's only 4 and it would do it for him. So next year, Chris, you're going to be sitting pretty happy when there's only 4 teams sitting in the playoff. But I think you're right, Chris. I think that if we do stick with this 4-team playoff, then by process of elimination and process of hypes, then you're going to see more than one SEC team in that, I guess you can call it a playoff, in that +3 or +2 system, whatever you want to call it. So I don't like having to narrow it down to 4, because then there's still the human bias, there's still those preseason rankings involved that nobody really follows or pays attention to, but weigh so heavily in the BCS system and who our national championship game is. Whereas if Oregon crapped the bed this year, like USC crapped the bed last year, starting the season off as the preseason number one, if they somehow ran together a 2-loss year, then they're still sitting on the bubble. Whereas somebody else like Northwestern, or let's use Georgia since they already have a loss. You know, if somebody else who started outside of the top 4-5 teams, they don't have that equal of a shot. So on the other side, guys, we're going to get into some Johnny Manziel because I know it's the topic of choice with college football fans. We're also going to get into this parody a little further with the College Tailgate guys here on AM 1230 WFAS. But first, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. Stick with us on the other side. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, AM 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Johnny Manziel, to me, I don't understand what the guy's thinking. I think he's the soap opera of football right now. You know, every week somebody comes out and they say, oh, Johnny Manziel, he's doing this, he's doing that, you know, he can't do this. And then the next week he surprises everyone and takes something else to the next level, and he just does something else to re-up himself and reestablish himself as the biggest jerk in college football. Now, yesterday, he didn't argue with his coach, okay? He wasn't fake signing autographs like he was in week one. But at the same time, he was still being that pompous jerk that everyone in America has somewhat grown to hate. Whereas yesterday, he ran over a guy to get into the end zone, if you've seen the clip. He was scrambling out to the right, runs over a guy to get into the end zone, and then walks over him as if he's a WWE wrestler. Which my first reaction to the clip was, that's awesome. Way to go, Johnny Manziel. That's why I love you, Johnny, and everybody else hates you. But when you take a step back and you really look at that situation, if I'm a professional, you know, scout trying to scout Johnny Manziel, and I look at that, and do I look at that and think, this guy's not learning?
Every scout just saw a 15-yard penalty.
Right? I mean, you can't on the end of the play. Do that. So, Chris, is Johnny Manziel digging himself into a bigger hole, or is this just all fun and games?
Well, first of all, it's okay to be a pompous jerk. You know, I've been accused of being a pompous jerk, and sometimes I am a pompous jerk, and it's fun. But Johnny Manziel, you know, he pulled those shenanigans against Sam Houston State.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a target on his back, and he's playing, you know, Alabama next week. You know, Alabama's going to be ready for him. He's not a big quarterback. And we all know the read option exposes a quarterback. Look at the hit that Trevor Knight took from West Virginia last night. You know, nearly Goulson, and I call him Goulson, even though his name is Colson, nearly took his head off. You know, Alabama's going to be – Johnny Manziel's going to – oh, I would hate to be Johnny Manziel.
I hear you, man. When you're doing these antics against the little-known school, the guy you're supposed to run over and then walk over, that walkover gets me every time, man. I love it. I love watching that clip. I'll have it up on Sports Man Cave here in a little bit. But, Doug, is this hurt? Does this hurt the stock of Johnny Manziel this week after week of him coming up, you know, on every single news talk station?
Well, first of all, it's important to note that the Money Badgers just don't care. You know, last week Jay and I were actually talking about this whole fiasco and his antics before, and you know. Obviously, you know, he's been the piece of unanimous jackwagon of the week on 2 Cents Radio. It's going to hurt his stock, if, you know, but on the flip side, every year there's that one player that gets singled out, and they become either the media darling or the media villain throughout the entire year, and it's been consistent. Yeah, you know, we've had Cam Newton, we've had the Honey Badger. Mm-hmm. You know, every year there's one person that seems to make waves.
And God's Child, Tim Tebow. You can't forget God's Child.
Yeah, but the difference is Manziel doesn't respect the game. You do not go up against an overmatched opponent like Sam Houston State and rub that in their face. I mean, you know, that's like me going out and slapping a kid and then doing a little dance. I mean, that's just bad character. And he's piling a karmic debt, and I'm pretty damn sure Alabama's going to cash that check next week.
Alabama's not going to be the only one looking for Johnny. You know, LSU, Arkansas is going to look at him, and even Auburn's going to look at him and say, don't pull that here.
In baseball, you know, I caught forever. If a guy hit a home run and he did a little dance or he showboated, next time he was coming to bat, you know, I'm telling the pitcher, hit him in the wiener.
Jeremy, where do you sit on this?
Well, Chris. I have my thoughts all together, and Chris made that statement.
Throwing curveballs, no pun intended there.
If you you follow me on social media, I'm not a big fan of Johnny Manziel. However, you know, I have a question for everybody. Where does Texas A&M, where's their responsibility in this? I mean, they're allowing this to happen. I mean, even up to the president of the university, there was a picture I saw last week of him making that money sign. I know that has nothing to do with the NCAA, but the perception is just wrong there, even if it didn't have anything to do with the investigation. They're allowing this to happen. You know, why isn't Kevin Sumlin stepping up and, you know, disciplining him more? I mean, he made the university, so, you know, they're not going to sit him down. They're going to allow him to run.
Jeremy, you remember what happened to our friend Bowden down in Auburn?
No, I do not.
Terry?
Oh, yes, I do.
Boosters got mad at him and kicked him out. What do you think happens if Sumlin benches Manziel for a half for disciplinary reasons?
Well, then that's just it. It's all about money at this point, and Johnny Manziel is going to be allowed to do whatever he wants to do then.
Well, what Sumlin should be doing is making Manziel run until he vomits. every little antic that you throw on the field, Buddy, you're doing laps for me in the heat and until your lunch comes up.
Pete, where do you stand on this topic, buddy?
I did myself a favor. I didn't pay attention to Johnny yesterday. You know, it was an afternoon game, Sam Houston State, like you guys have been talking about. And to me, it was a good week to take off from Johnny Manziel because obviously there was week one, the suspension, Rice, all that stuff coming back in the second half. Next week, this week now is Alabama. So, you know, week two was my week away from Johnny. But also on top of that, I think, like you guys have mentioned, he is going to get his clocks absolutely just cleaned by Alabama this weekend, and then everything's going to come back down to earth, and then we're going to hear less and less and less, I believe, about Johnny Manziel as the season goes on, because to me, Texas A&M is not going to have the year they had last season. The defense is not nearly, I mean, it wasn't great last year, but to me, it's even worse than it was last year. So I think, you know, as the season goes on, we'll all have a nice reprieve from Manziel. He won't be a Heisman finalist, and, you know, life will go on.
So, Pete, I want to open. Oh, okay, Doug, you want to chime in? Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, and I think the reason why Texas A&M's not doing anything about this is because it's bringing publicity for their school. And for people that are involved in marketing, they want to be the first to tell you there's no such thing as bad publicity. If your name is out there, you're getting publicity. You're getting recognition, good or bad or indifferent. You know, so they're going to ride the money badger as long as they can, you know, as long as he doesn't break any NCAA violations.
Which I guess brings us to our next topic. Thank you for the natural segue there. You must do this for a living. Paying players and this whole topic of Johnny Manziel signing autographs and he gets a slap on the wrist. Now, Doug, since we just left off with you, I'll start with you here, but paying players, is that something that is inevitable, that is going to be the future of college football? We've all just mentioned that who cares if you're the university about what Johnny Manziel does to your university because he's bringing you money. Now, is that something that going forward you're going to have to start shelling out a little more than a four-year full-ride scholarship going forward? Do we have to start paying our players?
Well, from what I understand, they already get a small stipend for every travel away game. You know, I don't know how much it is, to be honest, but they don't have to pay for hotels. They don't have to pay for any meals. They don't have to pay for any transportation. You know, aside from their full scholarship, which includes room, board, books, materials, supplies, everything that they need. You know, and then for the ones that go to the bowl game, they get a ton of stuff. You know, from the bowl game committee, you know, for the game that they're going to. It's going to be a hot topic, but, you know, the drawback to that is that Title IX is going to come into play. You're going to have to make sure that the money that you're giving to the football player is equal to the amount of money that's going to the golf team.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, where do you stand on paying players?
Well, taking Title IX out of it, because Doug's exactly right, that would definitely be an issue. Looking at it strictly from a football standpoint, I'm not really sure. I don't know. I mean, I can understand that, you know, these universities are making absolutely tons of money off these players. But Doug's right. I mean, these guys, they don't really pay for anything during the season. During the off season, you know, I've heard plenty of stories of players, you know, trying to find places, you know, to feed themselves. But I don't know. I'm still, the verdict's out with me about whether or not we should pay him or not.
Pete, you got an opinion on this, bud? We need you to fix your mic again there. Chris, what's your opinion on paying players, buddy? We'll come back to you, Pete.
As a former college athlete myself, unequivocally, you have to pay them. Full cost of attendance scholarships, it adds an additional $225,000 per sport. Just to cover the incidentals, do you realize that during the season you can only give a limited number of meals to your team? In the off season, you can't feed them at all. Do you realize that these rules were written when most people went to a school that was at least near their home, and now you have kids from Houston going to West Virginia? How do they get home for the holidays?
Yeah,
you need to give these kids money to buy incidentals like food when season's not in session. You need to give them money to buy food other than the meals that the the teams are allowed to provide during the season. You need to give them money to do their laundry. You need to give them money to buy over-the-counter medications. You get $250 a month as a stipend that's supposed to cover your laundry and your incidentals. You know, when I was in school and I got that $250 stipend, it was gone the first weekend. And it's a lot more expensive to take a girl out now than it was when I was in school, especially since I couldn't get a date. But
Pete, where do you stand on this paying players?
You can't pay them because not enough of them are worth paying anymore. I mean, they're already getting – you go to a good school, you include the housing, the tuition, the tutors, the food. You're talking a lot of guys up to 200 grand. And frankly, far more of those guys – aren't worth 200 grand than are. Yeah, there's Johnny Manziel who brought in $37 million or whatever it was last year. But for every one of him, there's hundreds of guys who don't live even anywhere close to being worth the 200 grand that they get in 4 years or 5 years of tuition and food and housing and all that stuff. So we talk about Manziel, but we forget that he is one out of thousands of guys. He's the outlier. He's not the norm. And that's what I think people forget.
Jeremy, I know you want to close this up here as we are about 2 minutes away from break. So, Jeremy, real quick, bud.
I just wanted to – one more thing. You talked about parity in college football. This would definitely take the parity out of it. You're going to have some schools that just can't afford to pay players with others. Now, I'm sure there would be a standard across the board, but there would be some schools that just wouldn't be able to pay players that other schools would be able to or stipends they'd be able to receive. So you're going to take the parity out of college football if you allow players to be played.
Yeah, now that's something that is definitely in the equation there. You know that once you start paying players, it's no longer, is Alabama going to be the best team in the country? And it's more something along the lines of Alabama is the best team in the country because they have the biggest payload.
Let me jump in here real quick.
Sure.
And point out that the Big Ten has $1 billion in reserve to pay players, and West Virginia University has had the full cost of attendance scholarships in their budget for the past 2 years. Hmm. It's coming. It's part of Division IV, and everybody needs to understand that part of this is to kill parity, and the other part is the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit.
Hmm. Well, guys, good stuff today. I'm glad you guys could all come on and join me. This has been the College Tailgate post-game report. We had Chris the Dude Lambert of the Spin Zone. You can follow him on Twitter at the Dude of Dub V. We had Doug Hazard at Barely Doug. We also had Jeremy Simon of Blue Gold Sports. You can find him on Twitter at @BlueGold_Sports. And then we had Pete Mundo of WFAN. Thanks, guys, so much for coming on with us today. I'm sure we'll be in contact soon, have you guys on in the future. Thank you very much. On the other side of this break, guys, I'll break down the NFL. That's right, you'll get my NFL picks here on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I want to thank all the guys who came on with me last hour. Chris the Dude Lambert, follow him on Twitter at the Dude of Dub V. You can follow Doug Hazard at 2 Cents Radio. Jeremy Simon at @BlueGold_Sports. Go to BlueGoldSports.com. And then Pete Mundo of WFAN here in New York. You can follow him on Twitter as well. I believe his is just Peter F. Mundo, I believe, is his handle. So that was our college football tailgate wrap-up. I wanted to get into that because, you know, as big as college football plays in our lives, there's not a whole lot of coverage on it on Sunday mornings because the NFL overshadows everything. Hell, if the NFL played during the, you know, elections, we would hear more about the NFL than we did the elections. We saw that with the Obama, you know, when he was running against, oh, God, who did he just beat? Who did he just beat? I'm not big on politics. Who did he just beat? Come on.
I'm a huge politics.
There
Romney.
It is, Romney.
Yeah, I totally spaced too.
Yeah, it's all right. It's, you know, it's that's how much connection. I thought of that election. So, but, yeah, Romney was, well, there was a, Obama was the Chicago fan, and Romney, I think he was like a Cardinals fan or something, or maybe that was McCain. Who cares? Anyways, the point was that there was so much coverage around how the NFL worked into politics and not the vice versa. People care about the NFL more than anything else on, well, in America, because you get outside of America and all of a sudden soccer becomes relevant for whatever reason. But on that point, on that point of the NFL trumping all, there is a team who just won your Super Bowl, NFL, who did not get to play their first home game for the first time since 2003 at home. The last team to not play a home opener after winning the Super Bowl, they were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the most irrelevant team in football. Okay, so I can understand why a Florida team, who Florida fans, I've said this multiple times, Florida fans do not exist. Okay, nobody in the state of Florida cares about sports. People watch the Miami Heat. They go to those games because they're good. They've become a celebrity event. But there's a reason why the Florida Marlins, I'm sorry, the Miami Marlins had to move to Miami because nobody would go to their games where they were previously located. There's a reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars, Miami Dolphins, Tampa Bay Buccaneers all rank in the bottom fifth, really, of the NFL. You know who the highest team out of those three teams, the Miami Dolphins, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who do you think of those teams last year had the highest attendance?
I don't know, but I will say I spent a year in Florida, so I do know Florida sports, and I will tell you the secret to Florida sports. Everybody loves football in Florida. Everybody loves soccer in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody loves a Florida team because nobody in Florida is from Florida.
Right.
It's like the D.C. area where we're from. Everybody has their favorite team. It's never the Redskins.
That's not true. I grew up Washington, D.C., baby. I'm a Redskins fan all the way. But regardless, my brother's from Orlando. Okay, I'm very familiar with how little anyone gives anything about Florida sports. It's just so to have that happen to Tampa Bay, before I get too far off my point here, to have that happen to Tampa Bay back in 2003, not a big deal, not a big uproar. But to have it to the Baltimore Ravens, who the NFL has hung their hat on for the last 5 years since Harbaugh became the coach of the Baltimore Ravens, and since Flacco has been their golden boy for no particular reason at all other than the fact that he's gone to the playoffs for five straight years.
The NFL is trying to figure that one out, too.
They're still trying to figure out why Joe Flacco is on posters and billboards and banners.
Are we getting punked? Is that what
Ashton Kutcher?
That's what they're thinking.
Ashton Kutcher is around here saying, but the city of Baltimore got punked this past home opener for the Baltimore Ravens. Yes, Kenny Chesney was there and he was on a barge and he was playing in a party for the city of Baltimore. Okay, very cool. I can't say that that's what happened last year for the kickoff party. There wasn't something as unique as a star like Kenny Chesney doing something that he hasn't even done before, playing on a barge in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay. Very, very cool. There was a light show afterwards. Very, very cool. The city of Baltimore was, you know, it erupted. People were going crazy. But then you had a weather delay for a game that was thousands of miles away for your hometown team.
And a beautiful night in Maryland, by the
way. And a beautiful night in Maryland.
It was
gorgeous, not a cloud in the sky, gorgeous weather. You had this huge party going on, this huge party to celebrate the Baltimore Ravens, who just won their first Super Bowl championship since 2000. Okay, Ray Lewis retired. It should have been a big event for, you know, Ray Lewis. Congratulations. Thanks for everything you've done, guys. There should have been all kinds of past Ravens there. It should have been a second parade, but instead they got a weather delay and they got their team getting blown out on Thursday Night Football in somebody else's stadium. And why did that happen? Because the Baltimore Orioles decided that their game was too important to move. You know how many people were in attendance for that Baltimore Orioles game? Well, the attendance says 17,000, but a WBAL, which is the news channel in Baltimore, Maryland, a WBAL flyover of the stadium shows probably somewhere around the lines of 4,000 to 5,000 people. There is nobody in that stadium, and if you want to know the picture that I'm talking about, go to sportsmancave.com, because there is nobody in attendance for that Baltimore Orioles game. I live in Baltimore City, so I drove by the stadium on my way back from work. No traffic. Zero traffic. Okay? And I take the 395 that is the ramp that cuts right in between Orioles Park and M&T Bank. I didn't hit a single light on my way home. MLB, you screwed this up. But even bigger, NFL, you screwed this up. Because you wanted this game so bad to be on Thursday night. You wanted so bad for it to be the Thursday night game that you couldn't have put it on Monday night or Sunday night and done the Ravens some justice and given them a hometown game. You couldn't have given the Super Bowl champion a home game because you wanted so bad for it to be the NFL kickoff and you wanted so bad to put on this event to bring yourself dollars that you forgot about the Super Bowl champion and you forgot that they should be the fans, the ones who run the show, really, the ones who fuel the monster that is the NFL. You forgot about these fans and you forgot to give them their night. Sure, they had their parade last year, which I was in attendance for. I'm not a Ravens fan, but I was at the parade. It's not many times that you're in a city when the Super Bowl champion runs through. I was there. And it was great. There was tons of, the city did a great job of mapping it out. There was tons of buses so you could see, you know, Ray Lewis run through the city. And he did his show, of course, because he loves to woo and wave his hands around and be the center of attention. It was great. It was a great show. And then the parade ran right into the stadium, which a lot of cities wouldn't have been able to do because the Baltimore Ravens Stadium is in downtown Baltimore still. Could you imagine the Washington Redskins parading down the city streets of Washington, D.C., and then driving, hitting the highway and going into Landover, Maryland? Or
they'll go in the metro.
Yeah, or the
fill up a metro car. They'll paint it burgundy and gold.
Right, or the New York Giants, when they won their Super Bowl, they had to parade down the streets and then stop in the middle of the city. There was no, hey, let's go over and let's hit the highway over to New Jersey. There's none of that. Baltimore Ravens had a perfect scenario where they were able to ride the buses straight into the stadium with thousands of people around it and thousands of people in their stadium to see their boy Ray Lewis. So NFL, you screwed this up. You had the perfect opportunity to have a concert in the Inner Harbor on a barge with Kenny Chesney, something that's never been done before, and then those thousands and thousands of people to flood the streets to walk into their stadium, but you screwed it up. For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and to protect home ownership. Stick with me, because here on the next couple segments, I'm going to break down my NFL picks and tell you the only team that I have faith in today. Here, News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Everyone has the Baltimore Ravens so high on their list of power rankings. Everyone thinks that the Baltimore Ravens are this team, or, well, I should say thought that this team
had.
They had thought. There is definitely a past tense to that. I was not one of those people. I did not have the Baltimore Ravens in my top 10. Hell, I don't even know if I had them in my top 15. I didn't. I had Baltimore Ravens number 17. I think they're an 8-8 football team, and I think Joe Flacco sucks. And you got a little bit of that Thursday night. When you take Anquan Boldin and you ship him across the country to your brother as an early Christmas present, you are then stuck with Jacoby Jones as your number two wide receiver. Jacoby Jones sucks. There's a reason why he was chased out of Houston for not being able to catch. You stick him in Baltimore. Yes, I came on here and I said last year that he should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl because he had that big play where he bailed out Joe Flacco, and then he had that big play return to open up the second half, which really broke that game open before somebody somewhere decided that the lights needed to go out. But Jacoby Jones is only that. He's a surprise. He's a shock value kind of guy. He's not a number two receiver. Your number one receiver now falls on to, I don't even remember his name. Torrey Smith. There it is. Torrey Smith is now your number one guy in Baltimore. Last year, your number one receiver was Anquan Boldin. Your number two receiver was Dennis Pitta. Both those guys are gone now. Anquan Boldin is in San Francisco. Dennis Pitta is out for the season with an injury, although they're still holding out hope that he's going to return. So you sign Dallas Clark, and you think that that's going to work, when really Dallas Clark hasn't been relevant since Peyton Manning. So now, Baltimore Ravens, you sit here 0-1, and you wonder why. Well, here's why. You have no heart. You signed Joe Flacco to a $100 million deal, but the guy doesn't say two words and he goes to McDonald's when he signs his contract. The guy has no personality and he's not the face of a franchise. You then ship out your number one receiver to San Francisco, your tight end, your number two receiver gets hurt, and you have no better option at wideout. But for some reason, you love to throw the football because Ray Rice, who I think is the number two back in the league, is not good enough for you. Then on defense, a guy named Ray Lewis, who this franchise, these fans, and this team has never been without. Ray Lewis was the number two pick of the Baltimore Ravens. He was their second round choice back when they were an expansion team. He was the second ever name read out loud to wear purple. And now he's gone. And now you need somebody else who can fire this team up. Somebody else when this team... This team historically has been the team that punches you in the mouth and you have to react. Well, Thursday night, the Baltimore Ravens got punched in the mouth by a guy named Peyton Manning who threw 7 touchdowns. Threw for almost 500 yards. He put up video game numbers. Okay? The Denver Broncos punched the Baltimore Ravens in the mouth multiple times. And the Ravens were too... They just didn't have it. They didn't have it to get back up. And that's because their heart... Their soul and their leader no longer plays for them. Now they're a locker room full of wide-eyed does, rookies, and guys who've never been the guy. Yet Harbaugh, he wanted that. He wanted the locker room to be his. He wanted the locker room so that when he spoke, there were no other voices there to cloud his. That's why Ed Reed is now with the Houston Texans. Okay? There's no big voices in this locker room. And it reminds me a lot of the Washington Nationals. The Washington Nationals are a team that has all kinds of talent, okay? A lot of people thought that they were going to be the best thing since sliced bread, that they were going to be the greatest team ever. They're surpassing those Yankees. And now we're seeing a team who may or may not make the playoffs as a wild card. Why is that? Well, Michael Morse, who was their locker room fun guy leader, is gone, okay? When you take a leader out of a locker room, I don't care if that guy plays every game or if he seems to be a burden at times at the middle linebacking position, as Ray Lewis sometimes was. When you take that voice off the out of the locker room and off the sidelines, you're left with nothing. You're left with people scrambling. And when you get punched in the mouth, people are going to scramble for that voice. And when it's not there, they're going to lay over and die, just like the Baltimore Ravens did on Thursday night. So a lot of people are pointing to Peyton Manning and the Broncos and saying, this team is so good, they're going to the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning is back, he has all kinds of receivers, his receiving core is great, Wes Welker's the man, the Patriots are stupid for letting him go, 7 touchdowns. Well, they played a college team this week. The Baltimore Ravens were a college team with a bunch of freshmen who don't have their act together. And that's all it was. The Ravens will bounce back. They'll get better. But they're nothing more than an 8-8 team because they don't have a heart. and they don't have a leader. On the flip side of that 49-27 victory is Peyton Manning, who is a huge leader. The Baltimore Ravens wish that they were the Denver Broncos right now. Not because of the way that they got blown out, but because Peyton Manning actually is a vocal leader. He's actually worth the $100 million plus. Something that Joe Flacco is not. Joe Flacco is a toy. He's a pawn. Peyton Manning is a leader and a franchise guy. He's a Hall of Famer and he's one of the best ever to play the game. So when you surround him with a Wes Welker or a Thomas or Julius Thomas, the tight end, who if you were a fantasy guy and you started Julius Thomas, then you're a smarter man than I, although I did pick him up on the waiver wire. Get him if he's still, for whatever reason, if he's still sitting there in the waivers, you pick that guy up. You pick him up.
That's a guy, though, that will not put up a single point the rest of the season, though. There's always that one guy
there
in the
is.
First game.
There always is, but Peyton Manning loves his tight ends.
And that guy just sits on the bench for so long. You're like, come on, when are you going to do something?
You better do it. You better have that breakout game again. But I don't think that. I think that Julius Thomas is the real deal. He's not going to have another 25-point week or whatever the heck he had this past week where he just absolutely tore things apart. But he will be a 14, 15, 16-point guy in a lot of leagues because Peyton Manning loves his tight ends. And this team, this defense did not miss Mr. Fax Machine screw up this week, who now, by the way, plays for the Baltimore Ravens and really was not there. The Denver Broncos defense is now playing as a team. Their secondary works together, and their pass rush was there. Their offense was explosive, to say the least. You don't put up 50 points in an NFL game. That doesn't happen. But Peyton Manning made it happen because he has full control of this offense. They have bought into Peyton Manning's system. This isn't Coach Fox's system. This is Peyton Manning's system. The Denver Broncos belong to Peyton Manning. And when John Elway shipped off Tebow to the New York Jets, he knew that he was going to have Peyton Manning there. He knew that it didn't matter that Tebow was gone, that Tebow led them to their first playoff game in a long time. It didn't matter. None of that mattered. Because whatever system the Denver Broncos ran at that point was flushed down the toilet because he had Peyton Manning. And he knew that Peyton Manning was going to fix that offense, and it didn't matter who his offensive coordinator or quarterback coach was because this was now Peyton Manning's team. With that, though, the Denver Broncos become Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's a guy who's won one Super Bowl. He's been the guy who's been historically upset in playoff games. He's been on the losing end of jokes, and he's been in the losing end of games and Super Bowl runs. You don't have to look much further than last season when the Baltimore Ravens and Joe Flacco threw up a Hail Mary punch and stunned the football world in Mile High. And stunned the NFL, really. And the NFL must have been pissed off about it because they went and took those exact two teams and put them right in the exact same position on Monday night, and they put Kenny Chesney in the background and laughed at the Baltimore Ravens. So, these two teams are going in completely different directions. The Baltimore Ravens, you guys are not going to be very good. The Broncos, you are going to be good, but how good? How good are you going to be this year? Because we still have to see. We still have yet to see if Peyton Manning can get over the hump and he can really get that second Super Bowl. Now I'm going to get into my NFL plays today. All right. As I mentioned, I only have one team today that I'm actually playing that I actually love. They're my number one team, and I'll get into them in a second. But first, I want to break down these games. Thursday night, obviously the Denver Broncos -7.5 over the Baltimore Ravens. That was easy money. I had that game. Sunday, today, first game on the list, Pittsburgh Steelers -7. I have them beating the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans, to me, are a team that are going in the wrong direction. They don't have a quarterback. Okay, Chris Johnson has never been, since he was CJ2K, he has never been the guy. Okay, I don't know if it's his line. I don't know if he got his money and he just stopped caring. I don't know if it's that he went to ECU and anyone and everyone who went to ECU doesn't amount to much. Bruce, that was a punch at you, buddy. I don't know what it is with Tennessee. Kenny Britt's back. He's back off that knee injury. We'll see if he can actually produce, because Tennessee Titans are going to need him, because this Pittsburgh Steelers team is no longer a punch you in the mouth of the running game team. They're going to spread you out, and they're going to throw the football. And that's why I think 7 points is too low, because this Pittsburgh Steelers are going to want to try to do what the Denver Broncos did to the Baltimore Ravens. They're going to try to run up the score, because that's the new Steelers football. So Pittsburgh Steelers, -7.5, take them over the Tennessee Titans. Next up, next game. Yeah, you don't have them up, do you?
No.
Jerk. Next up, we have the Atlanta Falcons. Next up, we have the Atlanta Falcons +3 over the New Orleans Saints. And a lot of people are high on the New Orleans Saints this year. You know, they get their coach back. Drew Brees is obviously another year into this system. Still have Marquise Colston. Didn't really lose too many pieces. Were able to build up their defense. Look, I like the New Orleans Saints. Okay, I like them a lot. I think they're the number two team in this division. The number one team being that Atlanta Falcons. And whenever I get the Atlanta Falcons plus anything, I'm taking them. All right, so you give me the... You're going to spot me a field goal for the Atlanta Falcons? Yes, Matt Ryan, give me Matty Ice and this explosive new Atlanta Falcons offense to not only cover that three, but beat the Saints. Next up, next game. There it is. The New York Jets +3. Yes. Yes, New York fans. I am picking the Jets to beat, well, at least cover the +3 spread against this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. This Tampa Bay Buccaneers team sucks, okay? They don't really have a quarterback. They do have Revis Island, who's going to shut down Santonio Holmes if he plays today. I've still yet to see if Santonio Holmes is going to play today. There were rumors surfacing that he was going to be ready for week one. If he does play, I would imagine it would be in a limited role, but you better believe that your boy Revis is going to be all over him and he's going to become irrelevant. So now you have to look at the other tools that the New York Jets have, and there's not really any. Geno Smith is a rookie quarterback. I know he's starting in his first NFL game. He's going to be wide-eyed like a doe, and the running game is still to be seen with Powell. I get all that. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't have anything either. They have Doug Martin as a running back, and if he can't get anything going, then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are just as screwed as the Jets. This game could end up 3-0 with Tampa Bay winning, or it could end up 7-6 with the Jets winning, with scoring a touchdown on some God knows anything happened. Either way, it's going to be a low-scoring game, and I like the dog here, the Jets +3. Next game. Kansas City Chiefs -3.5 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars are the worst team in the NFL, and their uniforms are a joke. The Jacksonville Jaguars suck. There's nobody good who plays for this team, and that includes my boy Maurice Jones-Drew. Although Maurice Jones-Drew is in a contract year, and he's going to be looking to get paid, and you better believe that he will be on the first bus out of Jacksonville. So this Jacksonville Jaguars team is only going to get worse going forward. How is that possible? How can a team this bad be this bad for this long? The Cleveland Browns know all about that. But here's the Kansas City Chiefs. The number one pick in the draft last year, they were the worst team in football, and now all of a sudden you send in Andy Reid and Alex Smith and are supposed to make me believe that this team is legit, that this is a 10-win football team. I'm not buying that. But what I am buying is that they're better than the Jacksonville Jaguars, because the Jacksonville Jaguars suck. So give me Kansas City Chiefs -3.5. And if you have Jamaal Charles on your fantasy team, God bless you, because that guy is going to have a hell of a day. Next game. Final game before we have to head into the break here is the Chicago Bears. I have them beating the Cincinnati Bungles. The Bungles are going to win the AFC North. There's nobody in that division. The Baltimore Ravens, I've already touched on my dislike for them. I don't think they're a real team. I think they're a pretender. The only other team in that division would be the Pittsburgh Steelers, who I think could fight for a wild card, but for some reason in the back of my mind, I'm thinking Pittsburgh misses the playoffs. So that leaves the Bengals. It leaves the Bengals by default. The Bears have a new coach. They still have Jay Cutler, who, believe it or not, I'm high on, and they still have Brandon Marshall, who's one of the top receivers in the game. They were a 10-6 football team before they fired their coach, so they're very, very good. To think that they're going to take a huge step back because they got a new coach is idiotic. They lose an aging linebacker and Urlacher, but they gain youth on the defensive side of the football. Look for the Bears to cover -3 over the Bengals here. Going forward, we're going to get into more of these games. We're going to get into my picks. We're still going to have my straight cash homie play of the week and the only team that I like today. You're listening to News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to brucehallsports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I'm sitting here staring at the Fox Sports 1 lineup and thinking, why the heck do they promote these guys? These guys are a joke. It's amazing to me that Clay Matthews has a position as a sports analyst. The guy made his living as trolling sports fans, and now all of a sudden he is an expert. Ridiculous to me. But back to these NFL picks. I just gave you the Bears -3 over the Cincinnati Bengals. Next up, next game, hit them. Cleveland Browns. Yes, I'm a believer. I'm a believer in the Cleveland Browns, at least for 1 week, as I take them -1 over the Miami Dolphins because I believe the Miami Dolphins suck. I've now used suck for 3 teams, okay? I believe the Tennessee Titans suck. 4 teams, sorry. I believe the Tennessee Titans suck. I believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers suck. I believe the Jacksonville Jaguars suck. And now I believe that the Miami Dolphins suck. Pretty much anybody who plays in the AFC East other than the New England Patriots sucks. And I take the Cleveland Browns, who they have a youthful defense, who play in that AFC North. They're very familiar with good defense there. And Cleveland Browns are no stranger to good defense. They do play very good defense. They have some good corners. They have a good pass rush. And believe it or not, Tony Mazur, they do have a good football team. They're not a great football team. They're not a top-tier football team, and they're not a playoff team. But they do have a good football team, and they are working on getting to the next level. They have a very good running back in Trent Richardson, and their quarterback, Whedon, we'll see. I'm not completely sold on him, but we'll see. One thing they will be missing is their number one receiver. I believe his name is Josh Gordon. He will not be playing today as he took too many PEDs, and apparently he took so many that they peed him out into an illegal test for the NFL, so he will be suspended. I'm not exactly sure what the substance was, but I know that it was illegal. So he'll be missing, but that doesn't change my pick as the Cleveland Browns defeat the Miami Dolphins by more than one. Norv Turner makes his debut in Cleveland by chucking the rock everywhere, and I like him. And if you need a late start tight end today, if you need a late start tight end, take the Cleveland Browns tight end. I forget his name.
And who would that be,
I forget
Roy?
His name. But Norv Turner, he loves his tight ends. He does love his tight ends. But so if you can find out that guy's name, I forget what it is. I don't have it pulled up because the Browns are irrelevant to me, except for this one -1 play. So if you need a tight end, grab the Cleveland Browns tight end, whatever his name is, because Norv Turner loves his tight ends, and he loves to chuck the rock. So he's going to get a few looks today, get a few catches. And with Josh Gordon out, he'll probably get a few more that would have gone his way. Let's hit the next game. This line confuses me. There is nothing more confusing than seeing the Seattle Seahawks a -3.5 point favorite over Carolina Panthers, who were not a very good football team last year. I believe they were 8-8. Maybe they were 7-9. Still not a very good football team. So many people are high on this team. They're so high on Cam Newton. Cam Newton, he does have Steve Smith, but he has no running backs. I believe Jonathan Stewart is hurt. And they don't really have much of a running attack at all. Their offensive line has a hard enough time keeping Cam Newton standing straight up. And he really only has one wide receiver. I know they tried to put a couple weapons around him. Their defense can't stop the pass. And then you insert the Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks have a defense that I called all last year one of the best pass rushes, if not the best pass rush in the NFL. I know that my boy Bruce Irvin got popped for taking Adderall. He thought he was back in his college days studying for midterms, apparently. And now he has to sit out for suspension. There's a couple other guys who have to do the same. That doesn't change the fact that this is a very good football team, and they still have Russell Wilson, who set NFL rookie records last year for touchdowns. When you think NFL rookies last year, you think Andrew Luck and you think Alfred Morris and you think Robert Griffin III, because those were the guys who had rookie standout seasons. Well, there was another guy there. His name's Russell Wilson, who broke records. And this guy is going to lead the Seattle Seahawks to a very good record this year. A lot of people have him as Super Bowl contenders. So that's where this confuses me as to why in the world would a Super Bowl contender with a rookie quarterback last year who broke records be only 3.5-point favorites over the Carolina Panthers. I love the Seattle Seahawks here, but not enough to bet my own money. So if you want to go and do it, you go right ahead. But I still have the Seattle Seahawks -3.5 over the Carolina Panthers. Let's skip to the next game. This next team, both these teams are neither of which I am very high on. The Minnesota Vikings have Christian Ponder, who his wife is the only reason I pay attention to him. Then they also have Adrian Peterson, the best running back in the game, and he's about 9 yards short of breaking the NFL all-time rushing record. You can thank Christian Ponder for that. Even his wife said that he should have given the ball to Adrian Peterson a couple more times. You insert Greg Jennings. Yes, the same Greg Jennings who was a Green Bay Packer for the past couple of years and made a living catching balls from Aaron Rodgers. You insert him into the equation and you subtract Percy Harvin, who is now in Seattle with a bum hip. This is the new Minnesota Vikings. They still have a very good defense and a very good pass rush, but I am not sold on the team. I don't think Christian Ponder is the man going forward, and I think that if you have to rely too much on Adrian Peterson another year, defenses are eventually going to catch on and they're going to play up, which could leave things open, but again, your quarterback is Christian Ponder. The team they're playing and the team that I have them picked over is the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions are another team that people are extremely high on this year. Last year, their running back tandem consisted of nobody and nobody's sister. This year they add Reggie Bush, who a lot of people are high on, but hasn't been relevant since he dated a Kardashian. The guy catches passes. Yes, he had a decent year in Miami, but he's not a number one back in my opinion. He will never be anything more than a scat back. I know fantasy people out there would love to disagree with me, as he is going to be a very good fantasy option this year because the Detroit Lions sling the rock. They still have Megatron, and, well, they have Megatron. Matthew Stafford throws to Calvin Johnson, and he throws to Calvin Johnson, and he throws to Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson broke records last year. He broke a record from a guy named Jerry Rice, who a lot of people thought would never get broken. So, is there room for Reggie Bush in this offense when Calvin Johnson plays in it and Matthew Stafford has a man crush on him? I don't know, that's yet to be seen. But to give me a team last year that was 6-10 and had a trouble stopping the pass and really tackling anyone, to make them a favorite over the Minnesota Vikings with Adrian Peterson, I'll take the Vikes +5. Next game. The Indianapolis Colts take on the worst The Jacksonville Jaguars are the worst team in football. But the Oakland Raiders are the second worst team in football and could very well become the worst team in football in the next couple weeks. I hate the Oakland Raiders. They are starting, I believe they're starting Terrell Pryor today. So good for them. Good for the Ohio State Buckeye. He'll get his start. The other guy that they traded for in the offseason is Matt Flynn, who is notorious for getting traded for and then benched. They don't even give him starts. Seattle Seahawks, they traded for him, and he sat the pine. So then they traded him to Oakland, and it looks like he's going to sit the pine in Oakland too. So they can't figure out what to do with Matt Flynn. He looks like he's a career backup. Congratulations, buddy. You've got paid. Run DMC is the running back. Darren McFadden. He's coming off some injuries, but now apparently they've gotten rid of that running system that they ran last year that he tended to struggle in. There's no more zone blocking in Oakland, which should open up more holes for Run DMC, and he should have a breakout season. He also is running against a team in the Indianapolis Colts who have had notorious problems for stopping the run, dating back to when they were a powerhouse in the NFL with Peyton Manning. They could never tackle, they could never stop the run. So, if you have Darren McFadden today, play him. I do, and I am. The Indianapolis Colts, however, do have a man named Andrew Luck, and they still have a guy named Reggie Wayne. They are a very good passing offense, and they are a very potent passing offense. The Oakland Raiders don't have a potent anything, except for maybe the blood alcohol content of the fans in the stadium. Other than that, they don't have much going on for them as far as potency. So take the Indianapolis Colts -9.5 over the black hole of the Oakland Raiders, the joke of the league. Next game. Next up, my boy, Tavon Austin and the St. Louis Rams take on the Arizona Cardinals. They are favored by 4.5, and I will take them there to beat the Arizona Cardinals. I know Larry Fitzgerald must be the happiest man on the planet to no longer have to deal with Matt Leinart or Skelton or anybody else who tried to put on a jersey after that they were led to the Super Bowl by the grocery bagger. What was his name? Come on, help me out here. I don't have that pulled up.
Something?
No, it was not. I'll think of it here in a second. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer. He has a Grey Cup, and he has one Super Bowl victory with the Rams, Curtis Show on turf, and he led the Arizona Cardinals.
Kurt Warner. Thank you, Joe.
And he led the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl as well, and they lost. Yes, thanks, Joe. Kurt Warner. He was also a.
I knew there was a K in there. Somewhere.
He was also a Giant for a while. So there you go. I know the whole. I know the guy's whole biography, except his name. Anyways, they're still searching for a guy to fill that hole. They bring in Carson Palmer, who had a stint in Oakland. And usually when people play for Oakland and then somehow get out of Oakland, they improve. So look for Carson Palmer to improve. And
there are usually scientific studies on that. How did he get out of that black hole?
There is. There's scientific studies based around former players of the Oakland Raiders and how they suddenly resurged their careers. Enter Randy Moss and D'Angelo Hall. Both of them got out of Oakland and were able to salvage their careers. Let's see if Carson Palmer can do the same, but I don't think that they will have enough, even with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald today, as the St. Louis Rams. And my boys, Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey, will be catching passes from Sam Bradford. It'll be a college show out there. Richardson is it's still to be seen if he can fill the footsteps of Steven Jackson, but I like him catching passes from Bradford, and I like the St. Louis Rams today, -4.5 over the Arizona Cardinals next game. Next up. Oh, no? We're in a break. So you're just going to have to wait to see who I have in the San Francisco 49ers and Green Bay Packers game today, and you're also going to have to wait to see who is my top play of the day, my straight cash homie play. Here on AM 1230 WFAS is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Getting back to the NFL and these picks ahead. So far, to recap here, I like the Steelers over the Titans. I like the Falcons over the Saints. I like the Jets over the Bucks, at least if with a 3-point handicap. I like the Chiefs over Jacksonville. I like the Bears over the Bengals. I like the Browns over the low Dolphins. I like the Seahawks over the Panthers. I like the Vikings getting points in Detroit. I like the Colts beating the Black Hole. And I like the Rams and the WVU offense beating the Arizona Cardinals. That brings me to a big, big game. The San Francisco 49ers, as they currently sit -4 against the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers lost one of their top receivers in Greg Jennings. He's a Viking now. He pulled a Brett Favre and he dipset it over to a rival. Not quite he didn't pull the retire move, but he went over to the Vikings, which everyone knows is a very hated symbol team franchise when it comes to Green Bay, Wisconsin. Although we are talking about Aaron Rodgers here, who is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the league, and he will find other options with Cobb and JerMichael Finley, and he gets a new toy in Eddie Lacy. So do not sleep on this Green Bay Packers defense either. This is a team who I picked to go to the Super Bowl last year and am very, very high on again. However, they draw a very, very tough Week 1 matchup as they play against the San Francisco 49ers, a team who beat them last year to go to the Super Bowl. I do have the San Francisco 49ers going and winning the Super Bowl this year, so I like them a lot. I think Kaepernick could be and could become one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the NFL. I love the offense they're able to run with him, and he's big enough to run it. He can take the hits, he's got a big arm, and he's got a great supporting cast. He's got good weapons, and he brings in an even better weapon with Anquan Boldin, who is going to make him look like a $100 man, just ask Joe Flacco. He still has Frank Gore, who is still one of the top running backs in the league, and he has a great defense in San Francisco, as this team is just loaded for a Super Bowl run. I'm sorry, Green Bay, but I'm going with the 49ers with a -4.5 spread. I'll take the 49ers all day there. Let's go to the next game. Next up, the Dallas Cowboys take on the New York Giants. And Giants fans, I'm sorry, but as much as I love Eli Manning, as he is my starting quarterback in every fantasy football league that I am in this year, I don't think you guys have enough going forward. Hakeem Nicks has been hurt. It's still to be seen if he's going to be the guy going forward. Victor Cruz, although he is a very good dancer, I don't know if he is really the guy that you can hang your hat on this season. Wilson is a very young back, and it will be seen to see if he can fill the... it'll be seen to see, you know. We'll still have to see. We'll still have to see. It will be seen if he can fill the shoes of a Matt Bradshaw. Just move on. Just move on, yeah, that's right. It'll be interesting to see if he can fill the shoes of a Matt Bradshaw, because I don't think he can. I think a Matt Bradshaw was something that the Giants had and will not truly understand what they had there until he's gone. It'll be like a Taylor Swift song, very emotional, and it'll be a very sad breakup with a Matt Bradshaw gone in New York. Wilson has a fumbling problem, and with the Dallas Cowboys, this rivalry game, you cannot afford to turn the football over. Dez Bryant, who Michael Irvin thinks could be the MVP of the league, plays for the Dallas Cowboys and also for my fantasy team. The kid is a freak, but he's not Calvin Johnson, okay? He's not Anquan Boldin. He's not Larry Fitzgerald. He's not... Andre Johnson. I mean, he's a very good receiver, but he's probably number 5 on my list. I do have Anquan Boldin as a top 5 receiver. I like Anquan Boldin a lot. He's got great hands. He's getting there. Dez Bryant is getting there. He's not an MVP yet, but he is a force to be reckoned with, and he is a top receiving threat. I don't know if the Giants have a good enough secondary to slow down Dez. The Cowboys don't really have a running game. They've never really had a running game. They have DeMarco Murray, who is he's okay. He's not really something that you have to harp on too long to prepare for, but he's a decent running back, and he'll get the job done. Miles Austin still plays for them, and their tight end is back and healthy this year in Jadeveon Witten. Tony Romo has the 4th best QBR in NFL history, and he is one of the top quarterback ratings in the 4th quarter, believe it or not, in the NFL. So, what do we do with Tony Romo? Well, I think the Cowboys just might have a little bit more ready talent this weekend than the New York Giants. I think the New York Giants are a better football team than the Dallas Cowboys moving forward, but I don't think their talent is ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys, as the Giants are too beat up and they're too uncertain as going forward. Give me Tony Romo. Yes, give me Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys -3.5 to beat the New York Giants. I'm sorry. Next game. Next game would be the Washington Redskins taking on the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly's new college-style offense. I really like what Philadelphia has been doing. They're going to be pumping in music into the stadium in between plays. They're going to run a hurry-up offense. They're going to keep that stupid defense that they have that is all about stopping the pass, and they insert Michael Vick into a system that he ran all the way to the national championship. He lost, but he ran it in college and at Virginia Tech. You You add Shady McCoy to that, and then you insert DeSean Jackson, a receiver who under Chip Kelly actually likes his job. Although, it's still not enough, as Robert Griffin III on Monday night in FedEx Field will not be stopped. This guy came out with a new pair of shoes that says, "Play like you never left." A quote from his father, who is a military guy, who raised Robert Griffin III to be a military-esque player. The kid is a born leader, and he is the future of not only the Washington Redskins franchise, but the league. The kid is a freak. If any of you caught his RG3 will win, or will to win, but they made it look like he will win because he will, documentary on ESPN, you know the heart that this kid has. He has a healthy Pierre Garçon with him, and he has the leading rushing attack from in the 2012 NFL with Alfred Morris. Washington Redskins at home over a very low 6-10 Philadelphia Eagles. I like the Redskins minus 3.5. Let's go to the next game. Next up, my Super Bowl team from the AFC, Houston Texans, take on a Norv Turner-less San Diego Chargers team. This San Diego Chargers team, it will be very interesting to see what happens going forward. I don't really like them. I don't like Phillip Rivers. I think he has a water pistol arm. He's never been able to make the big throws. When you took Vincent Jackson away from him and you put him in Tampa, he hasn't really done anything. Their tight end's getting older. Their defense getting worse. And now they have the number one ex-girlfriend in the league laying over their head in Monte Teo on their team. So I don't – there's not anything really to like about the San Diego Chargers, but there's a whole lot to like about the Houston Texans. The only reason why this line isn't more than 4 points is because Arian Foster may or may not play the full game today, which means that Tate will get a lot of the carries. There's still Andre Johnson. There is still Matt Schaub. They're a very good team, and they still have J.J. Swatt on the other end playing defense. I still like the Houston Texans. I still think they're one of the more balanced teams in the NFL. So give me the Houston Texans minus 4 over the San Diego Chargers. Next game. That leaves us to one. One game, and it's the only game that I'm playing this week, and it is my straight cash homie play of the day.
Straight cash homie!
Yes, if you've been keeping track with me, that leaves one game, and that is the New England Patriots minus 9.5 over the Buffalo Bills. Where do I start with this one? New England Patriots are led by Tom Brady, if you're just tuning into the world, and it doesn't matter who he's throwing to because he makes completions happen. You subtract Wes Welker, but you add Danny Amendola, who I believe is a younger, faster, more volatile version of Wes. Wes Welker had a hell of a debut in Denver. Yes, Matt, I know he's on your fantasy football team. Way to auto-draft there, buddy.
I just want to make sure you remember that. No, if you didn't catch my Facebook post, my Twitter post, Instagram pictures.
He's on my fantasy football team in one of the leagues, so I was extremely happy as well. But you added Danny Amendola, and if Danny Amendola can stay healthy, that's the key there. If Danny Amendola can stay healthy, then Tom Brady is going to have a fun new toy. I know Aaron Hernandez is locked up, and Rob Gronkowski isn't probably going to be back till maybe the second, third, or fourth week. But that doesn't matter. It's never mattered to Tom Brady. As the Buffalo Bills suck. They don't have a quarterback. EJ Manuel has been hurt. I don't even know who their backup quarterback is. I heard that they signed Matt Leinart, but then I heard that they cut him. I think Kevin Cobb is there. It doesn't matter. The Bills suck. Their only weapon is C.J. Spiller, and Stevie Johnson can go to hell in a handbasket because he doesn't have anyone throwing to him. So if he's on your fantasy team, I'm sorry, but you drafted a bust. The Buffalo Bills are terrible. They're a terrible defensive team, and they're even worse on offense. So give me the New England Patriots as my straight cash homie play of the day.
Homie.
That's right, Randy. That's right. 9.5. Minus 9.5 over the Buffalo Bills. Here are my other top plays in case you missed them. The Houston Texans minus 4 over the San Diego Chargers are my number 2 play of the day. I said that the new coach in San Diego, same bad defense. One thing that worries me about this game is the possible absence of Arian Foster, which I already touched on, but I think the Texans roll. Number three play of the game, yes, it is the Cleveland Browns minus one over the Miami Dolphins. Miami doesn't have any real playmakers. I'm not sold on them, and Norv Turner's going to flex his muscles to show that he's still relevant in the NFL. Number four play of the day, the Washington Redskins over the minus three over the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't care if you have a new look, sexy offense, Philadelphia, you still suck, and I still hate you. Number five play of the day, the Denver Broncos minus seven over the Baltimore Ravens. Sorry, guys, but I called it. The Baltimore Ravens are just not very good. Like I said a million times, they're an 8-8 team at best. The Atlanta Falcons, my number six play of the day, they're plus three and a half over the New Orleans Saints. Give me it. I think the Atlanta Falcons are the second best team in the NFC, number one going to San Francisco. Number seven play of the day, and a team that I'm very high on, the Seattle Seahawks, minus four over the Carolina Panthers, a team that I'm very low on. I hate you, Cam Newton. I think you're not a leader. I think you're a scumbag, and I think that you're impossible of leading a franchise to the postseason or victory. Give me the Seattle Seahawks minus four over the Carolina Panthers, and those are my top plays of the day and of the weekend. Guys, enjoy it. The NFL season is back. You can sit back down on the couch. You can tell your wife to give you a couple hours to yourself and watch your favorite football team. Or if you're like me and you have all of the teams, you can sit back and watch them on split screen and sit down with your beautiful wife who also enjoys the football game, but who is also probably going to hate me as she is a Baltimore Ravens fan. So, guys, enjoy it. It's NFL Sunday. It's back. I'll see you next week.